everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Laetrile when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed enterprise. It's a three-party, limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it is regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you have absolutely no input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of the above, and if you fail to pay, you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important, and it is also the most expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding, and it is more costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. But you probably know a whole lot less about that marriage contract than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, about two-thirds of all marriages here in America end in divorce, but whether you're a husband or a wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. Now, that's why you should know and understand the terms of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. So whether you're married or not, why don't you write for my free general law CD set and let me share some vital information with you about the law and that marriage contract. Just call us direct at 417-273-4967. And remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. That number to call again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. That's easy to remember, georgegordon.org. And click onto the email machine and then send us an email for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. O-R-G, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book on Laetrile. It's not the only book by any means. It's called Laetrile Case Histories, and it's the Richardson Cancer Clinic Experience. Dr. John A. Richardson wrote this book back in 1977. It was put out again, republished in 2005. So it's been brought up to date, and it tells quite a little story here. This Dr. Richardson now is a licensed, bona fide medical doctor. I pointed out to you that there's 14 cures to cancer. Most of the 14 cures to cancer have all been discovered by medical doctors. Laetrile is not an exception. Not an exception at all. Laetrile, also known as vitamin B17, it's also known as amygdalin, is a naturally occurring vitamin, just like vitamin B6 and vitamin B12 and vitamin C. It's just a naturally occurring substance. It's a necessary vitamin, and if you don't have it, you will get cancer, given enough time. I mean, if you don't die from a heart attack first, if the heart attack doesn't get you, the cancer will if you have a deficiency in B17. Just like if you have a deficiency in vitamin C, you will get scurvy. Guaranteed. There's just no two ways about it. If you don't have vitamin B17, you will get cancer. It's absolutely guaranteed. There's just no two ways about it. And it was discovered by a Dr. Krebs back in 1950. This Dr. Krebs, he for some reason or another, we'll get into that a little later, decided to look into this to see if there was any benefit to it, and so he did. And then he published his findings, and then some medical doctors picked up on it and said, my God, if I've got cancer patients. If I have a patient here with cancer, I can treat him here with this vitamin B17. And the cancer will go away. And that was Richardson's experience. He's just an ordinary run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety doctor in Berkeley, California, back in the 1970s. And he's having lunch one day or dinner with a buddy, and the buddy says, "Have you ever heard of this B17?" He hadn't. And so he got to talking to Krebs, who lived across the bay in San Francisco, and one thing led to another, so he started treating his patients. Well, one day, he's looking out of his office window, and he sees this lady across the street. And this lady across the street is taking down license numbers. Pretty soon she's taking photographs. And one day the police come, conduct a raid, arrest the doctor and his nurses, haul him off to jail. And he's later prosecuted for the violation of the California anti-quackery law. So I just wanted to bring you up to speed here on this third program here, talking about Laetrile, that this doctor now, he's licensed, bonded, and insured. I mean, they're not after him for malpractice. He hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't cut out the wrong lung in an operation. He hasn't prescribed some kind of a drug that killed somebody, at least not yet. Give him time, he probably will, but he hasn't yet. What he's doing is prescribing Laetrile. None of the patients that he has prescribed this for has died yet. In fact, they have survived. And we mentioned to you, you know, his very first case was his nurse's sister, and she had cancer in her arm. Her doctor had said, "You're going to die in about 3 to 6 months." And so the doctor here, you know, naturally, the doctor's nurse is talking to her sister from time to time. "Well, Maggie, why don't you come over here to Dr. Richardson? He's got this new experimental program. It has to do with Laetrile. It's supposed to cure cancer. Why don't you give it a try?" He tries it on his very first patient, and the cancer just miraculously goes away. Now, when you have cancer and it's diagnosed and it goes away, which does happen about 6% of the time, so you can take 6 people out of 100. They have clinically diagnosed cancer. You know, I've taken biopsies and they run it through the laboratory and they say, "Oh my God, you've got cancer." And of course, that's a death sentence. You know, you got cancer. Well, at least it's a death sentence in about 2/3 of the cases. And so people take cancer pretty seriously. They get really upset and really excited about it. And so this woman had cancer, and so it's been diagnosed. She comes to Richardson. And Richardson gives her the Laetrile, the cancer goes away. So naturally, the medical profession says, "Oh, this is one of those spontaneous remission cases." That's where 6% of the time the cancer just goes away. We don't know why. We haven't got a clue. Just it went away. Now, of course, you can rest assured that had they been giving her some kind of a therapy, that the cancer, if it went away, they would have ascribed it to the drugs that they gave her. Now, in this case, or in the cases of spontaneous remission, these are people that when they're diagnosed with cancer say, "Kiss off, I'm not going to do anything about it." I had a buddy do that. He finally died from the cancer, but he lived 6 years. They diagnosed him with cancer. He did absolutely nothing to live 6 years. Now, ordinarily, if you're diagnosed with cancer and you live 5 years, they call that a cure. Well, what do you call it if you don't do anything and you die in 6 years? That should have been classified as a regeneration case. You know, a spontaneous remission case, rather. And then he died from cancer 1 year later, you know, which is when the medical doctors do that, they say, "Well, you know, he was cured," and then he developed cancer again. So I've pointed these nonsensical conundrums to you, and Dr. Richardson has a chapter in his chapter 2, and it's called Self-Evident Absurdities. Self-evident absurdities. And one of the absurdities is that this B17 vitamin has cyanide in it. And so this is the story that I heard years ago. It said, "Well, see, we've banned it because it's got this deadly poison in it, and therefore it's not good for you." Well, duh. You know, there's a lot of things out here that are poison. For instance, poke berries are poison. But poke is a food. Tapioca is poison, but tapioca is a food. You don't see anybody, you know, at the FDA, you know, putting a ban on tapioca now, do they? See, there's just a lot of things out there that if you take in excess are toxic or they're poisons. Or in the case of the puffer fish, you know, here's this deadly poison skin fish that, by the way, the Bible tells you not to eat because it doesn't have scales, but the Japanese take it. And if you prepare it correctly and cut out the poison sacs and so on, you can eat the fish and it won't kill you. But here again, here's a poison fish. You know, we're not banning puffer fish because they're poison now, are we? So when it's used, you know, and we would presume that if a doctor is, you're under a doctor's care, you're in the doctor's office and the doctor is prescribing this or that or something else, that, that it would be reasonably safe. Now, we have all kinds of experimental activities that go on with doctors. For instance, when you have a child with ADHD, the medication that's being given to him, Ritalin or some of these antipsychotic drugs, those are experimental therapies. They don't know whether your kid is going to be benefited by this or not. It is not a proven therapy. And in fact, medical science doesn't cure anything. And I tell you very plainly, we don't know what causes cancer and we don't know how to cure it, but we do have a treatment for it. So they're always experimenting. But if the experiment works and it's cheap, then they wanna bury that. And that's what happened to the intravenous chelation. You see, there's two ways to deal with clogged arteries. You can use surgery and it costs $100,000. Or you can use chelation and it costs about $1,000. You can unclog your arteries with chelation. It just melts it away by using vitamins and minerals. Or you can operate on it. That's a radical intrusion into your body. And you can cure it that way. Now, if you do the intravenous chelation, it only costs $1,000. Therefore, the doctor that does it only gets $1,000 less costs. But if you go to the same doctor, or you could go to a different one, but you're going to go to the medical profession and they're going to take you to the hospital and cut veins and arteries out of your legs and splice them into your heart and valves and one thing, and it costs $100,000. And that surgery is only good for 5 years, they tell you. And then 5 years from now, you got to come back and have another one done. By the time you have a second or third one, the surgery kills you. I mean, there's only so much, you know, that your body can stand. And so from the time you have your first bypass surgery to the time you have your third one, about 15 or 20 years has gone by. So this isn't something that you should be contemplating when you're 20 or 30. You want to wait until you're 50 or 60 before you have those. But anyway, the medical profession has these cures. They have these protocols, they call them. And Laetrile, this B17, is outside the scope of those protocols. And so if you get caught using these protocols, and then they're not approved, well, then they call you a quack, and then they arrest you and put you in jail. And that's what happened to this guy Richardson. Now, Richardson, unlike a lot of doctors, wrote a book or two, and he fought the case. And then we now have his historical record, and he has 63 or 4 cases in here of his patients that he treated with Laetrile that survived. And then there's some more evidence over here we'll bring you a little later about the need for this B17. So he goes on here, and page 35 he says, more than 270 types of human neoplasms have been recognized and defined histologically, and the degrees of variation within a single tumor type can be infinite. So medical science has taken cancer, and they biopsy you, and they take these out, and they identify these neoplasms, and they have 270 different types of cancer. 270. So, you know, you come along and you've got liver cancer, and they say, well, you know, you've got liver cancer. And next time, well, you've got prostate cancer. And the next guy, he's got lung cancer. So if this cancer develops in your lung, it's called lung cancer. Very scientific. And then if it's in your liver, you got liver cancer. And if it's in your pancreas, you got pancreatic cancer. And so 270. So I guess there's about 270 places on your body where you can get cancer. And if it comes up in one of those places, we hang a label on it. Kind of reminds me of the red-winged blackbird. That's a very scientific name. Red-winged black bird. It's a bird that's black but has red on its wings, so we call it a red wing black bird. I just love science, don't you? The argument, thus, is that a single treatment for 270 types plus infinite variations of cancer is simplistic. But first of all, no Laetrile clinician would ever advocate Laetrile without also prescribing pancreatic enzyme supplements, other vitamins and minerals, and a low animal protein diet. So it isn't exactly a single treatment. Nevertheless, let us lump it all together for the sake of comparison, and we'll call it one treatment. It's called metabolic therapy. By contrast, orthodox medicine has three treatments to offer: surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. Is that really significantly less simplistic? If so, then perhaps we should have 270 treatments to do the job right. But what then of the infinite variations? Experience has proven that the greatest gains in medicine have been made not through complexity, but through simplicity. All of the conquered diseases have been beaten by a single substance therapy based upon a single proper understanding of the disease itself. As long as orthodox medicine is unable to demonstrate what the cause of cancer is, its spokesman would be well advised to become more humble about labeling the theories of others, especially when those theories have the weight of medical experience on their side. Another common cliche used by the medical profession against Laetrile is that if there's any value in it, its developer should obtain a permit from the FDA to test it under scientifically controlled conditions and then publish their results so the medical community can evaluate it. The implications in this are that, first, the developers never have tried to obtain an FDA permit. And second, they're not willing to reveal the results of an honest, scientifically controlled experiment. But here are the facts. The McNaughton Foundation applied to the FDA for permission to test Laetrile on April 6, 1970. Permission was granted on April the 27th. The very next day, the FDA drafted a letter stating that extensive additional data would be required within 10 days or the permit would be rescinded. The letter arrived on May 6th, leaving the McNaughton Foundation only 2 days to prepare literally hundreds of additional pages of data. So the permit was canceled on May 12th. Andrew McNaughton proceeded with the paperwork anyway, believing that the permit would be reinstated upon its completion. That job was finished on May 15th, and everything that had been requested was sent off to Washington. The FDA, however, was steadfastly refusing to grant the permit to test. One of the reasons given for refusing is that Laetrile might be toxic. They said it is dangerous to initiate human studies while the nature of the toxicity has not been elucidated in large animal species. Well, now, to anyone with any knowledge of the subject at all, that's an incredible statement. Amygdalin has been well known and listed in the United States Pharmacopoeia as a non-toxic substance for over 100 years. The human case studies submitted by McNaughton were further proof of its safety. To deny permission to test on the grounds that amygdalin may be toxic is mind-boggling when you realize that virtually all drugs currently approved by the FDA for cancer or cancer therapy are extremely toxic. So even without these considerations, one is faced with the fact that the amount of red tape now required for clearance of a new drug by the FDA is so great and so expensive that only the very largest drug companies can afford to comply. This fact has led many observers to conclude that the red tape actually was created specifically to serve the interests of the large companies and to squeeze out competition from smaller firms, which can afford neither the paperwork nor the political lobbying required to gain such favoritism. Well, let me pause here for a moment. Let me explain another vital factor to you. This is a technique that has been developed by government working in conjunction with major multinational corporations to freeze out the competition. An example of how this was done very effectively was in the oil industry. Back in the 1900s, the early 1900s, if you wanted to drill an oil well on your property, all you had to do was to hire a driller to come out there and drill it. Today, if you wanted to drill an oil well on your property, you'd first of all have to have an environmental impact statement. And then you'd have to apply for permits and one thing and another. Then the cost of drilling an oil well starts off at $100,000 for the permit. And then it goes up from there. So to drill an oil well, it costs $1 million plus. Well, hell, if you had $1 million, you wouldn't need to drill an oil well. People normally are drilling oil wells because they want to make money. So they mortgage what little they have and try the drilling practice, and if they hit oil, then their ships come in, and if it doesn't, well, then they lose what they've got. Now, I had a student here one time. He's from Hobbs, New Mexico, and he had a little string of, oh, I think it was 10 or 15 little convenience stores. Pretty successful guy. And these convenience stores, of course, sell gasoline. Now, back in the 1950s, when this guy got started, or 60s or something like that, before this environmentalism got going and took root, he lived in Hobbs, New Mexico, so he would go over to Dallas, or down to Houston or someplace, and he would buy truckloads of gasoline components. And he would bring them home to Hobbs, New Mexico, and he had a facility there where he would blend his own gasoline. So he could buy the ingredients that goes into the gasoline cheaper and truck it up to his facility, because he had about 10 or 15 of these convenience stores, blend it in his own facilities, and then he could sell that gasoline cheaper and make more profit off of the gasoline than he could if he just bought the gasoline from the refinery in its already finished form. Kind of a novel idea. When I heard it, I thought, well, that's kind of unusual. Well, then along comes the big corporations, and they lobbied Washington, and Washington started passing environmental laws and made it illegal to do that. What's the purpose behind that? It's to prevent competition. The only people who can blend gasoline today are the major refiners in these major refineries. You cannot go down and buy the components of gasoline. You know, there's 10 or 15 things going to this gasoline. You can't do that and blend it yourself. Now, his octane rating was higher, and his gasoline was better because he could control it himself. So he could put a better product out in the marketplace, and he could sell it for less money. Well, Jesus, that was competition to Shell Oil and to Standard Oil, wasn't it? Here's a little guy turning out a better product at less money. Do the big companies want that kind of competition? The answer is no. Now, this guy is not big enough to go to Washington and lobby to get laws passed, but he's, you know, big enough that he can buy the components and blend them himself. This is an example that you see here. Dr. Richardson is pointing out that if you're a little drug company, or if you're a little research outfit, you can't do business with the FDA because you don't have enough money to get in here and to comply with the red tape. So the environmental laws are not designed to protect the environment. The environmental laws are designed to protect competition. Nothing more, nothing less. And so the Food and Drug Administration isn't there to protect the health, safety, and welfare of the public. They're there to protect the profit margin of Merck and Pfizer. That's the purpose. Now, they can't come out and tell you our purpose is to protect the pharmaceutical companies. So they have to tell you that, well, it's to protect you from quacks. Excuse me. The first quack that I remember is the guy that said, wash your hands before you go from patient to patient. And the medical profession, they just fought that tooth and toenail. And the guy, you know, that said, wash your hands was a medical doctor. It wasn't some guy from the outside. It was one of their own. And in almost every one of these cancer cures, it's one of their own that has discovered this cure. and said, hey guys, we should put this into practice, which is just common sense. I mean, if you came upon an accident on the highway, and let's suppose there was a turn, and you come around this turn, you slam on your brakes, and you stop just in the nick of time because there's this overturned truck in the middle of the road. Wouldn't your common sense say to you, oh my God, I better get some flares out, and I better run down the road around the bend in the road and put these flares out and flag people down and warn them that there's this wreck up ahead? Now, doesn't that just make common sense? Yeah, that's what we would do as human beings. We would sit here and say, oh my God, there's this potential danger. Somebody could get hurt. I better warn them. So along comes a medical doctor, like this Dr. Richardson, says, oh my God, look at this. There's a vitamin deficiency, and this vitamin deficiency causes cancer. Therefore, I better run out here and warn everybody and tell them. Which he does. Now he ends up in jail over this, and he's wondering, why? Well, what would you think if you ran down the road and you were flagging down traffic? Along comes a highway cop, and he gives you a ticket. He maybe even arrests you and hauls you off to jail because you're interfering with the flow of traffic. And you say, but up the road here, around the turn, Mr. Highway Patrolman, there's an overturned truck in the road, and I'm down here trying to warn people. And he says, hey, listen, dummy. You're out here on the highway impeding traffic. You're under arrest. Now, we would say, well, surely common sense would prevail. No, it doesn't. Common sense does not prevail in the oil industry. Common sense doesn't prevail in the pharmaceutical industry. Let's grow up and get real. Come out and smell the coffee. Well, in 1948, Park Davis and Company was able to get a license for a new drug after submitting 73 pages of information. In 1968, the same company was required to submit 72,200 pages of data to accomplish the same purpose. One drug company had to present 456 volumes of data weighing 1.5 tons to secure a license for a simple muscle relaxant. It is widely accepted that if penicillin, insulin, or even aspirin were submitted for clearance today to the Food and Drug Administration, they could never make it through the FDA maze of requirements and paperwork. Well, boys and girls, all of that paperwork is not an accident. It's there on purpose. And it serves its purpose perfectly. It keeps all the competition out. See how simple that is? Now, Park Davis and these big companies over here, they've got money. They've got millions and millions of dollars to develop these drugs. But the cost of developing drugs is not millions and millions of dollars. In California, it costs $30,000 just to get the permits to build a house. So if you want to know, one of the reasons that houses cost $30,000 more than they need to is because of the permitting process, which has absolutely nothing to do with building houses. But it has everything to do with keeping black people out of certain neighborhoods, which is the purpose for the permitting process. It keeps the poor white trash and the blacks and other minorities out of certain areas of town. That's the purpose behind it. Now, let's all grow up and get real here. No, let's face reality. All right, now, halfway point here, and I got to give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, which is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. It's heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number to call is 417-273-4967. And once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, at least to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at Laetril. Well, prior to the enactment of the FDA's present new drug standards, an average of 41.5 new chemical entities came on the market every year. In the years following, the average dropped to only 16. Now, University of Chicago economist Sam Peltzman estimates that a 2-year delay in introducing drugs to combat tuberculosis, which would be a minimum at present, would have resulted in 45,000 additional deaths from that disease. Now, there are no patients on vitamins B17. If one did have $5 million to spend on complying with the FDA's pre-approval requirements, there would be no way to recover it, since every drug and vitamin firm in the world could manufacture it freely. There is little question that the current FDA red tape is condemning innocent people to death, and government's refusal to allow Laetril to be used experimentally constitutes nothing less than genocide. That's not true. I'm going to put a bracket around that, and let me explain why I say that. Notice he uses the term here, there's little question that the current FDA red tape is condemning innocent people to death. That's absolutely not true. Every one of these people is guilty. They're all criminals, every single one of them. And that's because you people out there insist upon eating those foods and then not eating those foods that you don't like or don't want. For instance, I had a guy here by the name of Roy. He's a farmer over in Amarillo, Texas. We were in tax class one day, and the subject came around to food, and we were talking about food, and I pointed out that Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 prohibit the ingestion, the eating of pork. And as Baptists do, see, if you're down here in Texas or Alabama or Georgia, see, you're down in what we call the Bible Belt. And of course, old Roy, you know, he's a good Baptist, I suppose. And so his comment to me was, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. And of course, I'm not here to tell you people what to eat. Far be it from me to tell you people what to eat. But there are some things that you eat that kill you. You know, for instance, you wouldn't know this because it tastes so good, but ham, bacon, and sausage are poisons. and human beings aren't designed to eat that. And that's why you plug up your arteries and you come down with a disease or come down with a condition called atherosclerosis, for which you then need chelation to melt it out, or you need bypass surgery. Now, the people who need bypass surgery are not innocent people. You don't plug your arteries up, boys and girls, accidentally. I mean, you have to go out of your way. You got to get up in the morning. You got to brush your teeth, comb your hair, get dressed, get down to breakfast, you know, and cook up these products like ham, bacon, and sausage in order for you to plug up your arteries. You're not innocent. You've been told and told plainly, don't eat that. Now, if you want to eat that, that's fine. That's a choice that you have to make in life. And, you know, you make your choice, and then you eat it, and then you smoke a cigarette, drink a cup of coffee, and go off to work. And I did that for years, you know, smoke a cigarette, drink a cup of coffee, and eat two Krispy Kremes. Okay. But over time, that plugs up your arteries. Over time, it depletes your body of certain vitamins and minerals, and over time, you develop some disease. Now, a disease is simply the results of your criminal behavior. Nothing more, nothing less. So when Dr. Richardson says, well, these people are all innocent over here, no, they're not. They're all guilty. Just like I am and you are and everybody else. Now, it happens that with B17, you can break the law and you can get away with it. For instance, you can deprive your body, you can starve your body of B17 until you come down with a tumor. Then you can go to the doctor and say, Doc, look here, I've got this tumor. Fix it. And the doctor can then prescribe B17 and it'll go away. You can do the same thing with scurvy. See, you can deprive your body of vitamin C. That's a crime. You know, it's a violation of law. Your body has to have vitamin C, children. It's the law. And if you don't have vitamin C, there will be a resultant disease that comes from it. We call it scurvy. See, we got a name for it. We got a label for this deficiency. Now, you can go to the doctor and say, oh, we can fix that. Here, take this prescription down to the Rexall store. You do. You take it down to the Rexall store. And for about 10, 20, or 50 times more than buying tomatoes and peppers out of the grocery section of your supermarket, you can buy this prescription, which contains high dosages of vitamin C, but we'll call it something else. We'll call it anti-scurvy medicine, see? And then you can sing the praises of your doctor. Oh, my doctor saved me from scurvy. God, isn't he wonderful? Yeah, he prescribed vitamin C for a deficiency. Now, we could do the same thing with this B17, except that cancer is a $500 billion a year business. That's spelled with a B, 500 billion. That's a half a trillion, spelled with a T, half a trillion dollar a year industry. Boys and girls, we don't want to break up that gravy train. That's a bunch of money. So what we do here is we outlaw this B17. Now, you can get it naturally and normally in all kinds of foods, you know, like sprouts and nuts and things like that, peach pits and apricot pits. I mean, there's all kinds of places for you to get it. But now, if you're eating out of McDonald's, you know, you're probably not getting a whole lot of vitamin C or a whole lot of vitamin B17. And Americans do not want to be told what to eat. We want to eat Krispy Kremes because they taste good. I don't deny that. If God made anything better than a Krispy Kreme, he kept it for himself. But there's very little B17 in a Krispy Kreme. Now, I'm not telling you not to eat, you know, at your local, donut store. But you have to be intelligent about it. You cannot eat donuts to the exclusion of peach pits. I mean, that's just where reality is located. And the peach pits taste real bad, and you're not going to like them at all. But there's other ways for you to get these vitamins and minerals. But for Dr. Richardson to say these people are all innocent and they've been condemned to death, well, there's a little bit of truth to it. Totally true, but there's a little bit of truth. It's kind of like the story I just told you a few minutes ago, where you come upon the scene of an accident around a dangerous turn. You got stopped all right, but here's this overturned truck in the road. Immediately, you know, you say, my God, I need to warn these people. And people will do that. You know, I come on the air and I'll say, well, and I'll tell you something. You'll say, I'll get some emails now and then, or letters, and they'll say, oh my God, we need to send a letter to the president.
If President Bush knew this about B-17, why he could save millions of lives. Or we need to send a letter to the American Cancer Society. Or we need to send a letter maybe to the American Medical Association or maybe to the Food and Drug Administration and tell them about this Lantrel. Boys and girls, don't you think that the good people at the FDA, with all those letters after their name, know about Lantrel and B-17? What in the hell do you think, as a plumber, carpenter, electrician, that I just told you about B-17 that these scientists and these professionals and medical doctors don't already know? So then the next thing is, well, are you telling me that these people know about the life-saving qualities of this vitamin and they're deliberately withholding it from the American people? Is that what you're telling me? Now listen up. That's exactly what I'm telling you. Now pay attention. They're doing it intelligently and intentionally. Why? Money. Nothing more, nothing less. It's nothing personal. I mean, the doctors at the FDA aren't sitting out here saying, how can we kill 45,000 people today? That's not going on there. I don't believe that for a minute. I'm not sitting here telling you now that there's some great conspiracy at the FDA and Pfizer and Merck and the big pharmaceutical companies and the Congress trying to kill people. That's not the motive at all. In fact, they need to keep you alive so that you can keep paying the bills. But by the same token, we're sure as hell not going to tell you voluntarily about a cheap, inexpensive cure to cancer. And we're sure as hell not going to sit by while members of the licensed profession go out here undermining and selling a cheap substitute for bypass surgery or cancer therapy. We're not going to sit still for that. Now, there's nothing they can do about a plumber that goes out and buys peaches at the supermarket and breaks the peaches open, the pits open, and takes the little kernel out and eats them. There's nothing they can do about that. There's no way yet that they have been able to hybridize the seed and eliminate the B-17 from peaches and apricots. But just give Monsanto a little time. If there's any way that they can come up with a genetically modified peach or apricot that has no B-17 in it, you can rest assured that they will develop it and then go out in the marketplace and sell it and call it new and improved. And always remember the buzzwords, new and improved. All right, so we're not condemning innocent people. The people that have cancer are all guilty of violating the laws of God, or they wouldn't get cancer. See, disease is the penalty that we pay for sin. Sin is the transgression of the law. And this is a knowing and intelligent decision that you make. Now somebody's going to say, yeah, but I didn't know. Mr. Gordon, I didn't know. Okay. So you're coming down the highway, and you round the turn at 60 miles an hour, and you did not know that there was an overturned semi in the middle of the road, and you plowed into it, and you got killed. Now you can go up to St. Peter at the pearly gates and say, but St. Peter, I didn't know. Okay, but it doesn't save your life. It doesn't do jack diddly squat. You broke a law. You ran into the semi at 60 miles an hour, and the sudden stop killed you. Boys and girls, you do not have to know things in order to pay penalties. Penalties sometimes are extracted from us. And you say, well, I was innocent. I don't know. They don't tell you that when you get your driver's license. They say it's up to you to keep your car under control. And if you drive around a turn at 60 miles an hour, and it's a blind turn and you couldn't see on the other side of it, then you were driving too fast for the road conditions. That's what they told me. Hey, son, you're just driving too fast for the road conditions. There's a big pile up here on the freeway. You see these once in a while, you know, on TV. It'd be a big fog, you know, in the Central Valley of California. And 30, 50, or 100 cars pile up into this mess. Well, you know, you can drive down the freeway at 70 miles an hour. And then you can put fog on the freeway. Hell, you can still drive down the freeway at 70 miles an hour. It's just that you can't see more than 100 feet in front of your car. You can see the white line, and you know that the freeway is straight. And so, you know, you can drive 70. That doesn't mean that you can see into the fog, you know, a quarter of a mile. And when there's a big pileup up ahead, all of a sudden, kerblowy, you run into this wreck. And so a bunch of people get killed, a bunch of people get hurt, and one thing and another. Obviously, driving too fast for the road conditions. But do people do that? Sure. Does it make good sense? Well, I don't know. You've been doing it for years and got away with it so far, but one of these days you won't. It's the way life is. So one of these days you won't get away with this B17 deficiency. All right, let's go on a little bit further. It says, as mentioned previously, no one with real knowledge of the subject claims that amygdalin is toxic, and yet apparently more to frighten the public away from Laetrile than anything else. Spokesmen for Orthodox medicine never tire of hinting at the possibility that people will be poisoned if they eat foods rich in vitamin B17. That's one of the first things I heard years ago. It's got cyanide in it. Oh my God, it's got cyanide! Well, okay, there's all kinds of poison substances in the foods that we eat. But, you know, in small doses, they don't kill you. And in fact, as we progress along here, we'll find out that the cyanide in the B17 is the specific cancer-killing agent designed by God himself into this product called B17. Or if you're an evolutionist, depending upon or believing in the miracle of random selection. Imagine the millions of years that it took to randomly select cyanide as the agent to kill cancer cells, but not kill the good cells, you know, the normal cells, because of the enzymes which neutralize the cyanide in the normal cells. But the enzyme doesn't neutralize the cyanide in the bad cells, and it kills the cancer cells. So it only kills cancer cells, but it doesn't kill good cells. Isn't that just real special? And I always call that the miracle of random selection. Now, there have been repeated scare articles about one or two people who allegedly became ill after eating apricot kernels, but none of them could ever be verified. Not one case of anybody ever eating apricot pits has been documented. Not a case. Now, a little later, I'm going to tell you a story here about the Hunza people over in Hunza, in Hunza land, which is over in the Himalaya Mountains. These people eat 200 times more Laetrile, because they live on peach pits. No, I'll take it back. Apricot pits. They live on these apricot pits. 200 times the average American diet, no cancer has ever been found in one of those Hunza people. They don't get cancer. Not a one of them has ever died from an overdose of apricot pit. And that's because when God designed all of this, he designed food so that it's non-toxic. And when it becomes toxic, it's because man has intervened and refined it. You know, cocoa leaves are fine. It's a green herb. Then, you know, man comes along and says, let's take those cocoa leaves and let's refine them down and let's make some crack. That's bad for you. The crack's bad for you. The cocoa leaves aren't. Now, the latest salvo from that gun battery is an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association, which discusses the alleged dangers of chronic cyanide intoxication as manifested in some Nigerian farmers who subsist on cassava diets. Cassava is unusually rich in vitamin B17, and the article in question uses this as one proof of the invalidity of amygdalin as a control for cancer. Few would question such an article appearing in a prestigious medical journal, and almost no one would bother to check it out. Yet if they did, here's what they would find out. One of the world's foremost authorities in the field of chemical toxicity is Dr. O. L. Oki at the University of Life, Ife, Nigeria. In January of 1976, he completed an unusually comprehensive study of the effects of cassava on the chemistry of the body, and he showed that while different animals have different tolerances for the cyanide component of vitamin B17, actual toxicity is extremely rare for any of them. To the contrary, he pointed out that experiments with high nitrilicide foods quite frequently produce stronger and healthier animals than before the experiments began. And then, here's what this researcher said, quote, "The degree of toxicity depends on the degree of hydrolysis by intestinal glucosidase to release the toxic aglycone. Also, when orally administered, thus taken orally, it is less toxic than almost any vitamin. Cassava is very poor in protein and vitamins, and the protein is also of poor quality. This poor amount is further decreased when cassava is processed to gari or lafoon. Thus, gari or lafoon and purpuri or purpuru all are mainly carbohydrates with hardly any proteins, and hence it would not be surprising that using any of these as the sole source of diet could result in a deficiency disease. From both animal and human evidence on the relation of neuropathies to cyanide content of food, it seems that apparent correlation between the two is an expression of the general deficiency of the diet rather than an expression of the specific effect of the cyanide." So here's this researcher. He actually said, cassava is a poor food to start with and causes vitamin and mineral deficiencies which cause disease. It's not the cyanide in the B17. And yet here's the American Medical Society publication comes out and says, this is now the Journal of the American Medical Association, discussing this B17. Why? Well, because they got money invested in it. Cancer is a $500 billion a year industry. We got money invested in it. And the last thing we want you people to do is to take cassava. Now, cassava is some kind of a food. I don't know exactly what it is. I've heard that name before. I don't think I've ever eaten cassava. If I had, I didn't know about it. But it has the highest, it's a food commonly eaten in Africa. And it's a food that is the highest concentration of B17 is in this food called cassava. About second and third is apricot and peach pits. All right, now, there's other ways to get it. You can get it from sprouts. It comes in nuts. And seeds. Nuts and seeds have B17. So you want to eat more nuts and seeds. Not all nuts and seeds have, you know, large quantities of B17, but most do. So if you're just eating nuts and seeds like Seventh-day Adventists do, you're probably getting plenty. The subject of cassava is a good place to introduce the next orthodox cliche, which runs something like this. There's no evidence that Laetrile works. Don't you think that we want to find a cure for cancer just as much as anybody else? Believe me, if there were any shred of evidence that it worked, no matter how faint, we would follow up on it. But no such evidence has ever been produced. The latest in this cacophony of wide-eyed sincerity comes from Robert C. Everly, spokesman for the American Cancer Society, who put it this way. "For 20 years, we have asked the proponents of Laetrile for specific scientific documentation of efficacy, but it has not been forthcoming. As reinforcement to this theme, a long list of scientific experiments, usually as cited, in which allegedly it was proven that Laetrile failed completely to produce any evidence of anti-cancer activity. Griffin has already exposed the ineptitude of these experiments for anyone who has the interest to pursue this sordid record of corrupted science. Let's point out, however, that in almost every case, the patients in these experiments were mice, which do not have the same metabolism as humans. The tumors were transplanted, which do not react the same as spontaneous tumors. And in all of the experiments cited, reduction of tumor size was the primary criterion for evaluating results. And there is nothing quite so easy to accomplish as failure. So as I've stated earlier, the foundation theory supporting the use of Laetrile is that the tumor is merely the symptom of the disease, that most tumors have only a relatively small proportion of cancer cells. Consequently, getting rid of the cancer often leaves behind a tumor of benign tissue as a memorial to the victory of nature over the disease. To use the reduction of tumor mass as the primary test of efficacy is indefensible from a scientific point of view and is further evidence of the appalling ignorance of orthodox researchers. It's a well-known fact that most cancer patients die not from the tumor, but from something called cachexia, C-A-C-H-E-X-I-A. Cachexia is the medical term used to describe the loss of weight and appetite, a decrease of strength, the appearance of anemia, an increased basal metabolism rate resulting in a caloric and nutritional deficit, and a general wasting away that is seen in terminal cases, according to the New York Academy of Sciences. You don't die from the tumor, kids. C-A-C-H-E-X-I-A. Cachexia, of course, is of major clinical significance in patients with cancer. And Warren reported that cachexia was the most frequent single cause of death in cancer, especially of the stomach, breast, and colon rectum groups. The pathogenesis of this cachexia remains unknown at present. So if it was true that cancer patients die not from the tumor, but from a wasting away of the body, then wouldn't we be doing the patient a favor if we could somehow improve his appetite, return his strength, and rebuild his body weight? This, in fact, is one of the primary objectives of treatment, and a great deal of space is devoted in the medical literature to this problem. For instance, in the Physician's Handbook, Current Diagnosis and Treatment, we find the following statement. A valuable sign of clinical improvement is that of the general well-being of the patient. Factors included in the assessment of general well-being include improvement of appetite and weight gain and increased performance status. Well, with this in mind, let's turn to the pages of one of the most often cited scientific experiments, which allegedly proved that Laetrile was worthless. It's the famous California report, released by the Cancer Commission of the California Medical Association. And its conclusion was stated bluntly and categorically that no satisfactory evidence has ever been produced to indicate any significant cytotoxic effect of Laetrile on the cancer cell. But on page 5, the report said that all of the physicians whose patients were reviewed spoke of increase in the sense of well-being and appetite, gain in weight, and decrease in pain, as though these observations constituted evidence of definite therapeutic effect. So it's contradictory in its very report. You take Laetrile, you feel better, and you eat more, and you recover. But the tumor is still there. And that's their bitch. Hey, the tumor's still there. Well, because if the tumor's there, the cancer hasn't been cured. But wait a minute. When you cut the cancer tumor open, it doesn't have the cancer. It's a benign tumor instead of a cancer tumor. Well, I'm out of time again, kids. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School and ask for it. The number is 417-273. That's 273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.